Hey everyone, Tara here from Arrow's Angle Podcast and Arrow Birth. I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. This is round two of Arrow Birth Consultants Answer Your Questions. Thank you so much again, you guys, for sending in your great questions on the different social media platforms, Facebook and Instagram. We really appreciate them coming in. Keep them coming, and we would love to continue this series where we answer your questions. On the podcast. So, yeah, today we're going to talk more about birth type stuff and then go right into the postpartum, fourth trimester, I'm already a parent type stuff. The round one, we were focusing more on prenatal leading into the birth, but we've separated them out. So, I'm going to dive right into it. The first question comes from Danielle McCammon. Thank you, Danielle, for sending this in. Danielle says, new moms should know all the newborn standard tests. It's good to know what to expect as your baby gets whisked away. And I think that's such a great question. I'm so glad that she asked that. And I do hear that a lot. Every birth is circumstantial, which I always am quoted as saying. And so some babies are not whisked away all the time, and some parents wish that their baby was, and they're wondering why their baby gets to stay with them and is wondering if they can be assessed and kind of taken away to make sure that everything's okay. So every birth and every parent and every experience is very different. So to answer your question though, Danielle, I just want to go over the, as you said, kind of the standard newborn tests that parents should expect in that immediate birth space. So I'm not talking the next day, I'm not talking, at your pediatrician afterwards, but just in the first couple hours, what parents should expect is ideally the mom and the baby would stay together, and the parents, excuse me, can have that golden hour, that bonding time with their new baby, getting to know them, exploring breastfeeding if they're, excuse me, if they're planning on breastfeeding their child. And typically, at least in hospitals in the Washington, D.C. area, and again, this can change if you're birthing in a home birth or a birth center or where you are in the United States or elsewhere in a hospital. But typically, around an hour to an hour and a half, they're going to want to do to the baby a weight. So we know the baby's weight at birth, and that's typically done in a hospital at the warmer. So usually in the birthing room, but kind of just a couple feet away from mom at a warmer. And in a home birth, that's usually done with a home birth, I'm sorry, in birth center, that's usually done with a sling that the midwife would have to get the baby's weight on a scale. So the weight is something you can definitely expect, typically again around an hour. At that same time, they will probably do a newborn exam, which is just like it sounds. It's a head-to-toe assessment of your baby, making sure everything's there and looks okay. And they kind of, flip the baby over onto their tummy and make sure everything looks okay on both sides and do a thorough newborn exam. So you can expect that as well. Especially in hospital settings and even in some out-of-hospital settings, you can expect to get offered a vitamin K shot at around that same time as well, about an hour or so after birth. There are alternatives to the vitamin K shot, but in most hospitals in the United States, they will want to do a vitamin K shot, which is to help with blood clotting. And I would encourage you to, speak with your birth consultant or doula and care provider to learn more about the vitamin K shot, but that's something you can expect as well. And the other one is erythromycin, which is I always like to say it's like a it's the consistency of neosporin that goes in your baby's eye, and it's an antibiotic ointment. And so especially in hospitals, we call it eyes and thighs because those are typically done together, the vitamin K shot and the erythromycin ointment. Definitely those things are something you could talk about with your birth team and especially your care providers about whether or not you want that for your baby. And that would all be done, like I said, around an hour of birth. In some hospital settings, they would do the hepatitis B shot. So the hepatitis B shot is the first in the CDC series of vaccines for your baby and newborn. And so the first one is at birth. And that would be offered, like I said, in a lot of hospitals at that first hour. Some hospitals do it like the next full day. It kind of just depends. I've seen both. So those, I would say, are the most common newborn standard tests that you should expect. Again, ideally, it would happen at about an hour after the baby is is born, so you get that good time together. But of course, every birth and circumstance is different. If you have a cesarean birth, typically those things are done before the hour, and they would do that almost immediately after the baby comes out in the operating room. So then once you are done with your surgery and kind of in recovery, baby can ideally stay with you during that time. Just to elevate it just a little bit more, if your baby is under 2,500 grams or over 4,000 grams, you can expect some additional heel pricks to check the blood sugar. So that's something that you can expect, especially if you are gestationally diabetic. They would probably be doing that as well. That would not apply to everyone. If you are GBS positive and if you don't know what GBS is, I would encourage you to talk to your birth team a little bit more. That's a test that you will get around 36 to 37 weeks of age to test that there is a certain type of strep bacteria living in your vagina. So you will know going into your birth most likely that you are GBS positive or GBS negative. Again, in the hospital setting, you typically would get two rounds of antibiotics intravenously to treat that GBS positive. In out-of-hospital settings, there's definitely some different options there. Some people do a HIPAA cleanse. Some people try to combat it naturally. There's definitely lots of different things you can do, but that's definitely something that you can expect if you're GBS positive, to get two rounds of antibiotics spaced out at about 4 hours apart. And if you don't get the two rounds of antibiotics before the baby is born, you can expect some additional heel pricks for the baby just to make sure that the baby doesn't have the strep bacteria and hasn't developed an infection from it. A hearing test is also something that you're going to see a lot in United States hospitals. If your baby is tiny, my twins were like right around 5 pounds at birth, and they had to take a car seat challenge just to make sure that it was safe for them to go home in their car seat if they were under 5 pounds, which I think in my case they were just over. But so if you have a tiny baby, sometimes you will get a car seat challenge as well. So Danielle, again, that was such a great question. And again, I don't think a lot of people really prepare for all of that stuff, and it's a load of information. We could spend many hours going into depth about each one of those particular things, but that's just a very brief overview of some standard newborn tests that you can expect, especially here in the United States. So thank you again. All right, the next couple questions talk a lot about what I was saying earlier with that fourth trimester. So we're already a parent, our baby is already here, it's the postpartum time, and there can be some changes in mom and in the family dynamic and relationships and all kinds of stuff. So Carolyn, 85. Thank you, Carolyn, for sending this in. She asks, can we talk about changes in mental health, specifically anxiety and irregular periods, vaginal health, et cetera, what to expect and what is common? I think this is great as well. I really want to elevate the conversation to talk about the postpartum time, to talk about mental health, especially here in America where we have such a high postpartum rate, but really, really everywhere. So changes in mental health. If you are experiencing any sort of depression, weeping, crying, that lasts more than 2 weeks is typically what we say, we'd like to encourage you to reach out to a care provider. So you can reach back out to your OB, back out to your midwife. There are lots of resources that we have in the United States as far as postpartum support. There's one great website that I like to send people to called Postpartum Support International, which is postpartum.net. They have kind of like a locator tool on their website where you can look up by state that what the resources are in your area. I'm here in Virginia, and we have something called Postpartum Support Virginia, which is a great way. You can call, you can attend a support group, you can talk with a volunteer, and all that kind of stuff. Changes in mental health are definitely very common and are not to be overlooked. So I don't want to brush over that too much, but I definitely want everyone to be aware of it and talk to their care provider and their support network if they're feeling like they are having any sort of postpartum mood disorders or anxiety or depression. So I will add to that, aside from the professional, reaching out to the local professionals and care providers, leaning on your tribe. So ideally, you've set up this, what I like to call your tribe or your team of people in your life that can support you during this momentous change into becoming a parent. And that's whether you are becoming a parent for the first time or adding any subsequent number, another baby to your family. Because every addition of any family member is, changes the family dynamic. So, leaning on your support network. Maybe that's your mom. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's your best friends. Maybe it's, the girls that came to your baby shower or blessing way. Maybe it's your neighbors. Maybe it's your faith group. Maybe it's a Facebook group that you're involved in or any social media platform where you're kind of walking through this experience with other people at the same time. In the same time, sorry. So lean on your social networks, and obviously keep the people in that are not going to stress you out, and kind of set those healthy boundaries with the people that aren't. I mean, that are going to stress you out. But definitely having support and a team and a tribe, if you will, while you're going through it can be, massively helpful. Massively helpful. So. To answer Carolyn's question, irregular periods. Excuse me, a lot of women that choose to breastfeed will find that their period is, it doesn't come back right away when they're, especially if they're exclusively breastfeeding. But I have honestly seen anything, the entire gamut. I've seen women that, exclusively breastfeed and get their period back very soon, within a month or two. And I've seen, I was kind of the opposite. Personally, I wouldn't get my period for 9 or 10 months after my baby was born. So I went a good while between being pregnant and that first postpartum year of not having a cycle. So there's a very wide range of normal there, and I would just tell you to just continue to monitor your cycle, try to temp if you can, and just see if you can tell if there's cervical fluid to tell if you're going to be ovulating, and make sure that you're figuring out what your plan is for birth control there. Because if you're, you definitely can get pregnant that first time that you ovulate, of course, before you get your period back. And I'm sure a lot of us have stories about knowing people that has happened too. Vaginal health, I would defer to checking with your care provider, your midwife, or your obstetrician there, and making sure that your everything is okay there. As far as the birth, if you've had a vaginal birth, especially, or even if you had a cesarean, but were trying for a vaginal birth beforehand, there's going to be some changes in the vaginal walls and in your pelvis. So just give yourself some grace, give yourself some time. Maybe check out a pelvic floor physical therapist to help you to learn some exercises and some things you can do to get yourself feeling better there. Probiotics, I'm usually always a big fan of as well, just especially if you've had any antibiotics throughout your labor, which if you've had a cesarean, you definitely have. And again, cycling back to the GBS, if you had GBS, you definitely had antibiotics if you had a hospital birth in the United States. So keep up with your probiotics as well there. I think that pretty much sums up Carolyn's question. Thank you again for sending that in. Heading down to Brogan Lambert. Lola girl, I love you. Thanks for sending this in. So Brogan Lambert sends in, now let's talk about navigating the fourth trimester, postpartum depression and anxiety, the symptoms, the treatment, the support, et cetera. So I feel like we kind of answered that with Carolyn's previous question. But I think my overarching theme, again, just to kind of summarize that, is to make sure, and this starts prenatally, to set up your support team, whether that's your partner, your doula, your birth consultant, your obviously your care provider, and then your social network of people around you that you can lean on during that fourth trimester time. I will also add, if you know that you are prone to depression and anxiety, use your common sense there. Maybe reach out to a reproductive psychologist or psychiatrist in your area and have them become a part of your birth team as well. I've definitely had that happen before with clients that were worried about, the depression and anxiety, or the potential depression and anxiety with walking into motherhood. And so they brought a reproductive psychiatrist onto the team that was also working closely with their OB to manage medications and, talk therapy. therapy and that kind of stuff. So maybe that's somebody that you bring onto your team as well. And that doesn't go to say that someone that's never had it before won't have it. It can kind of go both ways. So, but I have seen women that are prone to depression and anxiety feel like they definitely feel that way after the baby as well. So just, you know, get yourself the support, get the people on your team, you know, do as many positive things in your corner that you can prenatally, so then that can support you through that navigating that fourth trimester and beyond. I think we kind of talked about symptoms, weeping, feeling helpless, you know, exhaustion, obviously, but if those that weeping and really dark thoughts and all that kind of stuff is lasting for more than 2 weeks, then we definitely need to go ahead and seek out treatment. And as far as treatment, it can really vary as far as like talk therapy, you know, again, being with your social circles and leaning on them, as far as like being on medications where someone like a psychiatrist or a care provider would have to be providing that. Support groups, I know there's tons and tons. I've run some over the years with friends and colleagues, and those can really be game changers, and even the ones online as well. There's lots online as well. Brogan Lambert follows up her question with, can you decline certain procedures like cervical checks? And the answer is absolutely. And I am a big fan of iBrain, which is an acronym that you can use it really in any part of your life, but we tend to use it a lot in pregnancy and labor and birth and postpartum. And so if you are in the labor and the birth and there's, you know, someone wants to check your cervix, you can always use that iBrain acronym to kind of talk through whether or not this is something that you want to do. iBrain stands for, is this an emergency? The B is, what are the benefits? The R is what are the risks? The A is what are the alternatives, if any? And then capital I is for listen to your intuition. What does your gut say? Do you need this next step? Which I think is a really great one. And then the N stands for what if we do nothing? So you can kind of run through that little acronym. You can talk through that with your care provider and decide if that's something that you want to do. But the answer is most definitely yes, and let's have an informed consent conversation with your care provider before we move forward with any of that. So that's a great question as well, Lola. All right, I'm going to follow up with B.B. Pyle. Thank you so much, Brianne, for sending in this question. This is kind of along the same thing that we've been talking about, which is this kind of sadness or overarching kind of overwhelm that we feel. We can feel, I should say, in the postpartum and beyond. And so she says, how can I be happy with my babies yet so sad at the same time for no reason? And again, that could go in many different ways. It could just be like a fleeting feeling that you feel, or it could be, you know, like a postpartum depression diagnosis or any one of the postpartum mood disorders diagnosis. So, you know, I really feel passionately about this postpartum time. It's a very, very tender time. You have never, especially if you're a first-time mom or a parent, you have never cared for anybody else 24 hours a day over your own needs. And I'm talking about even basic needs like eating and sleeping and going to the bathroom and bathing and showering. So that adjustment is a massive, massive adjustment, and it needs to be treated with grace and respect and tenderness. So I think that there is a lot of us that feel so happy with our babies and our children, but yet they're sad at the same time, and we can't really figure out why. There's a loss of who you used to be before you became a parent. And of course, there's the gain of all the wonderful things of becoming a parent. But there's definitely a loss of like you before you had a baby. And I think that is okay, and it needs to be acknowledged. And that a lot of us, Brianne, feel that way about feeling like, oh my God, I love this thing so much, yet I'm so sad because, Friday nights used to be, date night with my partner and go out and all this kind of stuff. And things definitely change a lot once babies and children come along. So please, any of you that are listening, if this is going on and it's really becoming an impact on your life, I so encourage you to reach out to all the resources that I talked about: social circles, care providers, friends, your tribe, your partner, your birth team. Do not suffer alone. There's tons of resources on the internet as well. And just know that we're all in this together and we'll all support you. All right, guys, that's it for round two. ABCs, answer your questions. Like I said earlier, please keep sending them in and we would love to keep doing this series and we will address all your questions as we can. Happy New Year and take care. Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.